Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
And that. Okay. Right, so I'm now here. Well, I'm not here. Well, I am here, but... oh, that's a terrible way to begin. Right, hold on.
No, we thought it was great.
Okay, right, I'm going to just keep rolling. So I'm here in my apartment. You, the listeners, are wherever you are. I don't know where you are. You're in the world, right? In a car, maybe, in a library, maybe even in an English class, listening to this secretly while your teacher is trying to, you know, get through to you. If you are doing that, then, you know, put the podcast on pause. Focus on what you're doing, because there's nothing worse, is there, Lindsay and Gabby?
Absolutely not. I don't know about that. That's fantastic.
You need your students to be paying attention. So if you are listening to this in a classroom, just put the podcast on pause, okay? Put the MP3 away. Put the MP3 player away. Do it discreetly so that it's not obvious, and then just keep going and act like you know what's going on. That's what I suggest. So I am joined, and I'm very happy and very excited because this is like a sort of transatlantic podcast today.
That's right. Yes, it is.
I'm joined by Lindsay and Gabby from All Ears English Podcast, and this is like a double podcast sort of fusion.
Yes. All Ears English times Luke's English.
Yeah, we're happy to be here, Luke. Thanks.
Mega English. It's unbelievable. So, yeah.
Explosion.
English explosion. How does it feel to be on Luke's English podcast?
Amazing.
Awesome.
Yes. Absolutely. And for your listeners, we are two people. Lindsay and Gabby is not one name.
Yeah.
Lindsay and Gabby.
Yep. Two different. Very different.
So, which one's Lindsay and which one is Gabby?
So I'm Lindsay.
Okay.
And I'm Gabby.
Sound pretty similar.
I know. I'll speak a little bit differently.
No, you should be higher. I'll be lower.
I'm Gabby.
Okay. All right.
Okay. We'll do our best.
Could you just tell us where you are then, Lindsay or Gabby or both?
We are in the United States, in Boston, actually in Cambridge, which is right across the river from Boston.
Yeah.
But most people know Boston. It's a pretty big city. But then most people know Cambridge if you're familiar with Harvard, MIT, some of these famous universities we have out here. Yeah. So this is where we make the All Ears English podcast together in Cambridge, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
It's very interesting that Cambridge is the place in America where you have all your famous universities.
That's right.
Because, of course, in England we have Cambridge University as well.
We should have been more original, I know.
I don't know. There's lots of these similarities, actually, between...
There's also Boston, England, I believe.
Yes, I believe there is. In fact, many place names in the United States and in Canada are replicated in the UK, which is very interesting. I suppose that's why you guys in movies, I mean, in American Hollywood films and things, when they show like a scene in London or something, they always have to say London, England, to, you know, in order to establish. It's like, oh, I thought it was London, Ontario. I thought that was the Big Ben in Canada that they have in Canada, but that's often the case, isn't it? I mean, there's a Paris in America. You got Paris in Texas.
There is.
There's Paris, Texas, I think.
We copy all the European names. It's the style.
We need to get our own flavor here, man.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right.
Of course, I don't have Boise.
Boise? Do you have a Boise, England?
Not as far as I know.
You're missing out.
Really? Where's Boise?
Boise, Idaho.
It's in Idaho.
Yeah, or Minneapolis. You know, we have some, like Native American, meaning, you know, the Native Indians, those kind of names are native to the U.S. Right. Like Minneapolis, Minnetonka.
Yeah, there are a lot of them. Even the word Manhattan is originally an Indian name?
I think so. Yeah.
Interesting stuff. So this, you know, that sort of Native American influence is still there, very much so.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So let's see. You're both English teachers, and I believe you've been teaching for, you know, about 10 years or something like that. Is that right?
Each.
Both of us have been teaching for 10 years. Yeah, okay. More or less.
That's all it. Right. Yep. That's cool. And you now work in, as you said, in an English school in Boston.
Well, I've been connected with a university here in Boston for several years. And then, of course, both of us, we teach online. We have our own English instruction practices and of course, the All Ears English podcast.
Right. So we both have our own kind of teaching schools out beyond All Ears English. And we collaborate together with All Ears English. But those are separate projects. Yeah.
Okay. I'm just trying to imagine sort of like your context. For me, I mean... let's see. When I was working in London, I used to work in this school called the London School of English. And I was there, and there was a teacher's room with like all my colleagues, and we would all sit round between classes and we'd talk about, you know, how our classes were going and what the students had been talking about and things like that. Do you have a similar scenario? I mean, I suppose the two of you share your experiences quite a lot, I expect.
We do, because we're both physically in Boston, but now our teacher community is like with you and with our other colleagues who do English instruction online and who have websites and podcasts. And so our teacher's room is really online,
Skype or
whatever we use, email, Google, you know, it's online, which is so cool.
So we're kind of turning the model upside down here, I think, a little bit, looking towards the future.
Yes, absolutely. So I suppose for our listeners, what this could be like, what they could consider this to be like, is imagining that they are like a fly on the wall in an English teacher's room in a language school. You know what I mean? So they're like in the teacher's room, and the teachers are having a conversation about stuff. And that's, I suppose, a kind of context for this. It's just that it's a virtual teacher's room. It's a very long teacher's room.
Yeah.
One end of it's in Paris, and the other end of it's in Boston. So there's a lot of water in this teacher's room. Is there a leak somewhere? We need to call someone about all the flooding in
this
teacher's
room. You're so creative. I love it. Teacher's room. I love it. Yeah.
Okay. So you have students from all over the world. Let's say in your physical classrooms, do you have students from all around the world coming to the States?
Well, in Boston, Boston is a very international city, and that's one of the reasons why I came here, because I loved walking down the street downtown and hearing different languages all around me, Spanish, Arabic, Portuguese, Chinese. I mean, you hear it all in Boston, and it's a very international city. Yeah. So we both work with academics, professionals, people here studying for PhDs or MBAs, scientists. So that's our student group, right? I mean,
definitely
all over. I don't know if there's really not one nationality or one demographic.
Okay.
Yeah. For me, it's more about professionals, right?
Yeah.
People who really don't have a lot of time necessarily to improve, and they're under a bit of pressure.
Yeah.
They need to perform at work, whether that's in the lab or, you know, at a business meeting.
And me, Gabby, I work with more academic students, you know, maybe they're getting ready to apply to a degree program or working on academic writing. So we kind of represent those two different focuses.
So Gabby, you're saying that you work with a lot of international students who've come to Boston because they want to perhaps study at one of the universities there, and you're sort of doing pre-sessional kind of English work with them.
Well, that's right. A lot of students will come here actually before they're accepted to a degree program because they want to improve their English first. They need to get a certain score on the TOEFL or the IELTS and then work on their applications. And, you know, you might know the application period is so long. It's a year in advance.
Yes.
A about more or less a year in advance. So a lot of students will come here, you know, a year or 2 years before their degree program might start, just to work on their English.
Right. Very similar to the sort of context I was working in London. We had a almost the same thing. Students would come in advance of studying in a university in order to get their English up to the right level. Often they have to take an exam like the IELTS test. I don't know if you're aware of that one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. So,
it's more popular here now. There's a lot of, most universities will take both the TOEFL or the IELTS.
Right, I see. So it's a very similar thing. So, and Lindsay, sorry, just tell me a little bit about the students that you often deal with.
Sure. So the students I deal with are mostly professionals, right? So I have some students who are scientists here at MIT, some professionals who work in the banking sector in New York. I work with them on Skype or in person, right? Yeah. So sometimes I'll meet with them at their workplace, sometimes at a Starbucks. But for them, it's really like they've been disappointed with what's happened with their English up to this point, right? With the old kind of classroom model, it just hasn't quite worked for them. Or maybe they thought that they had a great level of English and then they came here. Then all of a sudden it's like, oh my God, I have to give a presentation in front of my board next week. There's a lot of pressure there, you know, so I really empathize with them and I like to really, you know, get in the ditches there and help them.
That's interesting because that happens to my students too. A lot of them in their home countries are in the super advanced honors English class getting perfect marks or grades.
Yes.
And then they come here to Boston in the US and all of a sudden they take the placement test and they're shocked that they place into lower intermediate English.
Yeah, because we know there's a difference between speaking and you know, a test.
Writing or
absolutely, because there's the standards in an academic institution in a country where English is very rare are gonna be actually, to be honest, a bit lower, aren't they? Like when you go into the lion's den, as it were, when you actually go into that culture where English is the first language, suddenly everyone is a native speaker, everyone's talking at this super high level, and you realize, oh my God, I thought I was good, and I'm, you know, I need to start all over again. Very interesting.
The playing field changes.
It's pretty humbling, I would say.
Absolutely. And that really is, that's a great example of culture shock, isn't it? Right there, immediately. And that actually, that's one of the things I want to talk to you guys about, because I'm sure that this is something that your students, my students, experience in quite a profound way, actually.
Absolutely. So
I'd like to explore that a little bit. Let's see. All right, so on the subject of culture shock, I mean, I've talked about this a bit on the podcast before. I think everyone basically understands what we mean when we're talking about culture shock. It's really the sort of disorientation that a person feels when they move or when they visit a new place. You know, it's like basically dealing with change, dealing with a change of environment and everything else.
And everything that you knew about your life, like daily interactions, suddenly it changes.
Yeah.
And things are different. I think culture shock, sometimes it's so shocking that you don't realize that you're having it. You just know that something feels different, and you might feel like maybe different emotions that are stronger than usual. Like you might feel really, really happy, like, wow, this is a great place. But then you might feel like, oh, this is awful. I'm having a horrible time. But you don't realize right away why. Yeah.
Or it could manifest in the body, right? So often people will experience a sense of being tired, and you don't realize that might be a way that culture shock is manifesting.
Exactly. Just speaking another language like all day, all the time is tiring, right?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, there are so many different ways in which culture shock can affect you. I mean, for example, just differences, first of all. It's about adapting to change. So it could be a change of behavior around you, people just acting differently, the values, the general values in the culture that you're now living in. It could be that, you know, this culture thinks that certain things are more important than others. For example, like I live in France now, and like, okay, timekeeping is an example of this. In the UK, we value timekeeping pretty highly. We're not the top of the list, because probably the Swiss
The The clockmakers.
Yeah, absolutely. The Swiss are famous for their timekeeping, and it's true in my experience that in a classroom situation, I might be, you know, as a teacher in London, I would arrive in class, and the ones who are always there on time or even before me would always be the Swiss. You know, the different people would arrive in the classroom depending on their relationship to timekeeping.
Right.
So the Swiss would be there first, the Japanese, the Koreans would all be there, German students would be there. And then you get the sort of Latin cultures coming in pretty, you know, afterwards. And then you get like a group of Brazilians kind of wandering in. They're being very loud and upbeat and so on. And so it's very interesting to watch a kind of culture clash going on. It's fascinating being an English teacher. You can actually observe, you know, these different cultures behaving in their own way. But you said like the body, it could be climate, weather, you know, just the weather difference. But other things that we don't realize too, like the fact that the environment that you're living in might have different sort of bacteria in it.
Oh,
you know?
Wow.
Like even in the water, the water composition might be different.
There's shock physically as well as mentally, emotionally, culturally.
Yeah, that's an interesting one that, you know, it's not so obvious, but it's there.
Yeah, right? That may be why people feel tired, because they're physically adapting to the different, you know, physical environment around them. The air quality is different. The temperature, the ambient temperature tends to be different.
Yeah, or maybe what's in the food, right? I mean, in certain countries, I know in India, for example, they use a lot of ghee, right? Which is butter, kind of butter. So I could imagine... I've never been to India, but if I went there, I might feel very heavy.
Well, certainly, the food can be very rich.
Right.
And obviously, I mean, India is a great example that if you go to India on holiday, it's pretty likely you're going to get the Delhi belly, which is, you know, they call it Delhi belly. It's obviously a kind of a, I don't know if it's technically food poisoning, but it's certainly like a gastric problem that everyone experiences. And it just shows the locals don't get it because they've adapted. They've got the right level of bacteria in the gut.
Right. People, Westerners from different countries, it can be a shock.
Have you been to India?
Yes, I've been there a couple of times. I managed to avoid the Delhi belly.
Okay.
But I did sort of, you know, I did feel a bit off color at times.
Mm-hmm.
But generally, I managed to avoid it. But I mean, India is just so different that it feels like you've been slapped in the face when you arrive in that country. For me, it's an incredible place. It really is. It's bewildering and wonderful. Right, I want to talk about your experiences. Have you lived abroad? You two? I think you have.
Yeah, we have. We both lived in Japan at separate times, and we both traveled quite a bit. We both do, you know, long-term travel, so, you know, months at a time. I mean, I'm sure, well, I can speak a little bit about Japan and also about Brazil. I think we have
plenty of examples.
Okay, so you've both lived in Japan. Who's that I'm speaking to now? Is that you, Gabby?
That was me talking about living in Japan. Yeah.
So, Gabby, you've lived in Japan. And Brazil. Lindsay, you've lived in Japan.
That's right. So I've lived in Japan. I also spent about a year in Latin America. So going throughout, backpacking throughout, and I stopped in Argentina for 3 months and Guatemala for 3 months.
Wow.
So,
awesome. Brilliant. I've never been to South America. Let's go to the World Cup.
Goodness.
It might be a bit late for that.
That's starting here.
I have this sort of weird idea that somehow came up in one of my podcast episodes in response to an email that I'd been sent by someone from Colombia, which was that it's kind of a fantasy. It's just a stupid idea that have you seen that film Searching for Sugar Man?
Sugar Man.
Okay, it's like a documentary about a South African musician from the 70s who made a bunch of albums. No, wait a minute, he's not South African, sorry, that's a mistake. He's from Detroit, and he made a bunch of albums in the 1970s, all right? And he didn't make it in the US, he just didn't get famous. I don't know why, it's a mystery, we don't know why, because he's brilliant. You know, his songs were fantastic. But he somehow managed to get some distribution in South Africa, right? Oh. And he became a massive star in South Africa. Huge. Yeah. He just, you know, captured the imagination of everyone at that time. But in Detroit, nothing. And he didn't realize for years. Oh. And in South Africa, they were crazy about this guy, Rodriguez was his name. And okay. They never saw him, they never knew anything about him until eventually a fan decided to try and find out what had happened to him. They all thought he was dead. There was this rumour that he'd killed himself on stage during a performance.
What?
Yeah, it's a crazy story, it's brilliant. And they managed to track him down. He's still alive, still living in Detroit. And they track. He's been working some menial, blue-collar job. And they bring him to South Africa, and boom, huge success. They worship him there. He's a massive star, playing in stadiums and stuff.
Oh, that's interesting.
Isn't that amazing?
It's all about context, making sure it's the right alignment.
Yeah, wow. So I've got this stupid idea that if I go to, like, Colombia, I'll arrive at the airport and it'll be like, you know.
Well, actually, that reminds me of a culture shock point, because when I lived in Japan, as someone who's not Japanese, you do get a bit of superstar treatment, especially... Yeah. I mean, as an American, I mean, they tend to have a bit of obsession with American culture, American pop culture. Yeah. So you do get a bit of the superstar treatment. Right. I mean, I wasn't playing in stadiums, right?
it's in the language, too, right? The word sensei is equivalent to teacher, doctor, right? And it's so all of a sudden you're given this elevated status, which, I mean, I'm speaking for myself. Yeah. I don't know that I deserved that status. I was just out of college. Yeah. And I was just a native English speaker. And so it's weird. It feels weird.
Yeah. I mean, that's positive. So, okay, that's one of the positive things you experienced in Japan, is that you felt this elevated sense of status.
Right.
Because they're all calling you sensei, which for us is cool, because we feel like sort of karate masters or something.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, like they're all kind of, teachers, you know, Luke sensei, they used to call me.
Yes.
And I was like, yes, that's right. I'm a Jedi master now.
Yeah, absolutely.
So it's cool.
Yeah, just your different status, right? Or status. Which is, another difference. But yeah, there's so many different shocks I had in Japan. I mean, one thing that I noticed right away was just the personal space difference. And what I mean is, for example, touching, like we hug as a greeting if you know the person, or shake hands. It's kind of an obvious example, and the Japanese bow. But I also felt the difference, like when I went to the convenience store and I would go to the cash register and pay for whatever, my soda or snack. And then instead of handing me my change, hands to hand contact, the clerk would put the change in a little plastic tray and then kind of slide the tray over to me, and there would be no contact.
Yeah. And if you try and take it from their hand, it's like, no, but it goes in the tray, please.
Sure, yes. So it's this very small example. It's a small thing, but I felt something different.
The Gaijin disease.
Yeah. Yes, I felt like, what's
wrong? That's right. The Gaijin is the Japanese word for foreigner, basically. Yeah. All right. That's a great example. Yeah. That's brilliant.
Sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I'm sure we could list loads of things about living in Japan that were different. I mean, do you have anything else to tell me?
Yeah, I could share an example of culture shock that I experienced in Guatemala. Would you be interested in that?
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, I really wanted to learn Spanish during my time in Guatemala. It was my last 3 months in Latin America. And I said, this is it. Time to get down to business. Let's make sure I go back to the U.S. fluent. So I didn't want to go to Xela or Guatemala City, because I would just hang out with Americans, right? Mm. So I decided to go to Totonicapan, which is this random town no one's ever heard of. It's half an hour outside of Xela in the highlands.
Right.
And so I showed up and I found a place to stay with, like, local people. These guys were a traditional Mayan community. Wow. So traditional dress. They spoke Quiche, Wow.
I believe that was Quiche in Spanish, but Quiche. And it was just like, wow, very intense. And so this is where the culture shock came in for me. I was struggling with some existential issues, some stuff related to my love life, some identity things going on for me. And I had no one to talk about it with, because if I were to go and bring up that, first of all, it's something I couldn't talk about with this really conservative community.
Yeah.
And it's also something that they're not, it's like you have certain problems in your life that might not be relatable from the perspective of someone else, right? For them, it's like a manner of an issue of survival, you know, they're dealing with making sure they can, you know, just get on every day. And I'm talking about my identity and existential stuff. So I felt really isolated, really lonely, and that contributed to a downward spiral for me.
What happened? Did you get sick or
no, something? I was okay. I mean, it makes it sound so like, grave.
No, it's true. It's true. It feels like that.
Yeah.
So that's interesting, though, because when you go to a new place, it does take time to connect with people and have those people you can talk to. I mean, I think that's part of culture shock, too, is just being like on your own. I mean, if you travel alone, right? Some people travel with their families or their partners or whatever. But I mean, this is part of the shock, right? Of going somewhere new. Usually you're on your own. And it's like,
it's intense. Yeah. It's very intense.
I guess often people who go abroad, they often do it to study, and if you're doing it to study, then you're probably quite young, probably in your early 20s or something, and you're not necessarily experienced enough to be able to deal with a big change like that. I mean, for example, a lot of students who come to school in London, it might be the first time they've ever been abroad. It might also be the first time they've ever been away from their parents. You know, I mean, in England, it's very common when you go to university that you leave home at that point. You know, people don't study university in their hometown. They leave and they go to a different town. Yeah. Like I left home when I was sort of 18, 19 years old, and I went to live in Liverpool. And that was a massive culture shock already. It doesn't have to be international. Culture shock can exist in many different scenarios within your country. It can also exist when you go to a new workplace. Because
we have different cultures, right?
Exactly.
Work culture, gender culture, anything.
Exactly. Social. Companies have like their own company culture that you have to adapt to. So it's exactly the same experience, just different sort of levels of intensity of it. Your Guatemala experience sounds like a pretty extreme one, actually.
Yeah, I sort of made that sound more intense than it was, but I think in the moment it was really intense.
Yeah.
You know, now it's not a big deal, but then it was hard.
Oh, yeah.
One thing that reminds me of is when you go to a new place, sometimes the... because you were saying it was kind of a conservative culture, and my experience has been sometimes the gender relations, like how do you interact with a male or with a female? Because my first experience really living abroad, I also lived in the Dominican Republic, and the male-female relationships are quite different. I experienced a lot of, walking down the street, I would hear this strange noise that sounds like this. And I was like, what is that? What's happening? I don't understand. What do I do? And I really didn't know how to deal with that, because Americans don't do that.
Yeah.
You don't make noises like that. You know, when you're trying to get someone's attention. And so I didn't know how to respond. I didn't know, should I ignore it? Should I yell at them? Should I run away? I don't know.
That's very tough. Yeah, it's a very tough call at that point. Yeah. I've got lots of friends here in Paris who sometimes experience the same thing. There's a lot of communities from all sorts of places in the world, but certainly Caribbean communities living here. And the girl, like I've got American female friends who experience the same thing from the sort of Caribbean guys that might kind of follow them around in the streets. And it feels, I think, for them to be very threatening and scary, because they think, well, you know, if... basically, from our point of view, in England, probably in America too, if a stranger follows you down the street, that's really scary. It doesn't normally happen.
Yeah.
I think probably...
you think you're going to get robbed.
Yeah, this person's going to rob me. Yeah, that's really frightening. But I imagine in some places that, you know, that's a fairly normal interaction. I don't know. I can't say for sure, but I suppose it's fairly sort of standard behaviour in some places.
Yeah, I think that's the issue with culture shock is normal is a completely subjective issue.
You don't know. You just don't know.
I think that's what culture shock comes down to.
That's right.
Exactly. It's all about normal. Normal is a sort of a level zero, and it's normal can move around. It changes, and you have to like, oh God, where's normal? And you don't realize. What about your students who you meet in the US who have come from different countries? Do they have any common issues that they talk about?
I mean, there's a ton of issues, but one thing that we've noticed that really applies to everyone would be just the way that people greet each other. I've noticed with my students that, you know, even if they're running a bit late or pressed for time, they'll still take a moment. If they see someone they know in the street or on their way to wherever they're going, they'll still take a moment to stop and say, hello, how are you? And greet each other, because it's just such an important way to show respect.
Yes.
Right. Yeah. And a similar story from a student of mine who's from Brazil, but who's working in New York. He thought it was very weird that when he got in the elevator of his apartment building, people didn't greet him or didn't make eye contact with him, right? These business Yorkers are kind of all business, staring straight ahead.
Yeah.
And that, so it's like when social interactions don't kind of match up with what you're used to, and when that is with language, it's just, it ends up being kind of a sense of loneliness.
Right.
Yes. I've got a good example of that, that in London, I used to live in a large apartment building with 200 apartments in it. So obviously lots of people sort of moving around the building up and down in the lifts together and so on. And my girlfriend is French. And when she would come and visit me at the weekends, you know, we would just often pass people in the building. And in London, it's pretty normal to just sort of leave people alone. You don't have to say hello, and it's not rude. In fact, we consider that to be kind of cool, that you're just like, you know, you're okay, you're in your world, I'm in my world, there's no obligation. We don't have to like go out of our way to say hello to each other. We have a shared understanding that we don't, you know, we can just coexist without having to say hello and have small talk. And so that, I think, is quite cool. It's kind of like, people just, we live in the building, and you know, if there's like a reason for us to talk, then things are perfectly friendly and cordial. You know, like, for example, if there's a party going on in the building and it's making lots of noise, and like my neighbor is in the hallway, like checking it out, I might go out in the hallway too, and I'll see my neighbor, and immediately we're on like the same level. We're like, oh, so they're having another party again. Great. You know, rather than sort of saying, oh, good evening. You know, it's not formal from the beginning. It's quite informal. So there's like this shared understanding that we don't need to do the formal greeting stuff. You can just go straight into the informal stuff, because we've gone beyond that kind of informal stuff. But my girlfriend is like, the people in your building are so unfriendly. They never say hello to each other. And I'm like, no, they're not. They're really cool. It's great, because everyone understands that we don't need to do all that hello stuff.
Yeah, I think that's why it's really important to understand a culture and the cultural values before you move to that country.
Because,
you know, we know, we can really understand what you're saying, because here in the U.S., privacy is a huge cultural value. Like, we value privacy.
Okay.
And that's why we don't necessarily have to say hi to everyone we pass on the street if we know them or something like that.
Yeah.
So you're coming from another country and you come into the U.S., you might automatically make that judgment. Americans aren't friendly or Bostonians aren't friendly, but actually there's something else going on that we should know about.
Or you might wonder, you know, if, for example, your French girlfriend, she might think, oh, is there something wrong with me? Why aren't people talking to me? Right? But it's not that. It's just a cultural difference. So if you can understand.
She's never thought there's anything wrong with her. She thinks there's something wrong with Britain, I suppose. You know, she's like, what's wrong with these people?
It's easy to think, right? If that's not the norm for you.
Yeah, that's another aspect of culture shock. Sometimes you feel lonely, like you're the different one. You're the one who's doing everything wrong. But then at other times, when you've sort of adapted a little bit, you can fall into that trap of thinking, well, I'm okay. okay. Everyone else is so wrong and stupid. That's What's wrong right. with these people?
Yeah,
you know? That's a fairly common thing because you adapt to a certain level of working normality, but there are still some things about the host culture that you don't understand. And so it's quite easy to start to conclude that these people are ridiculous.
You know? That's very common. I had that experience too. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we all go through that at some points. And I mean, just to offer some advice, I think there's two things that you can do at that point. Mm. I mean, one is obviously to try to learn more about the culture by talking to people or maybe reading online or listening to the All Ears English podcast at Luke's English
yes,
podcast.
Yes, absolutely.
But another thing is, you know, just try to refocus instead of thinking all the time, you know, like, oh, these people are just ridiculous. Try to think about what you're grateful for. What do you like in that culture? Yes. You know, for example, like when I was in Japan, I was thinking, oh, Japanese people, I don't understand them. You know, it's better if I can kind of rephrase and think, wow, I really love living in Japan because the food is great and the people are so respectful and there's so many beautiful temples I can go see. So just like focus on the positive to get through those rough spots.
Yes.
Go on. Sorry, Luke, didn't mean to cut you off there.
That's right.
Yeah, and also as Gabby says, know where you are within kind of your progression. I mean, what you were just talking about, there are like actual frameworks that people have studied in academia. Yeah. And I'm not going to bore our listeners by looking at this, but people have done research on this, on the stages that you go through.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we just mentioned, like, I'm okay, you're not okay, is just like the beginning of like a five-part stage.
It's like stage two or something.
Yeah, and not everyone progresses, you know, systematically through the stages. We might go back, we might not go back. Some people argue the stages don't even exist, right? But the point is, like, know where you fall within a framework and know that it's normal.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I am actually going to bore my listeners by going through that stuff at some point. Okay. Don't worry, that's fine. I normally sort of go on and on. I think my listeners sort of, my listeners have worked out that if they just, you know, they can just opt out whenever they want. But it's a podcast, right? I mean, that's the whole point, is that if you're listening to it on your iPod or whatever, that if it's a podcast, it'll remember where you are and you can just carry on listening from where you left off. Obviously, it's ridiculous if an episode is 100 hours long. That's just stupid. But what was I going to say? I was going to say, yes, I will go through some of the stages that psychologists have identified in culture shock. I was just going to say one other thing about how to manage culture shock or culture, like change management or whatever you want to call it, that there's always a good reason. There's always a good reason behind, you know, behavior that you don't understand. Mm. And it's always good to remember that people aren't just stupid and just doing things for no reason. There's always a pretty good reason behind it, you know. I mean, like, let's see. I mean, we could probably look at the Japanese as an example. I mean, like, some Japanese behavior can seem to be pretty weird to us, but there are deep reasons behind, you know, everything the Japanese do, and it's important to respect those things and not jump to conclusions, you know. I mean, one example would be, for example, in the Arabic speaking world, it's quite common to be super generous. You know, like if you it's super generous and very hospitable. Like if you go to an Arabic person's home, then they'll be really, really hospitable to you and very generous, and they'll give you food and they'll give you coffee and everything like that. And I've heard that the reason for that is because traditionally in that culture, you know, it was just, there's a lot of sort of desert area. The environment is pretty tough. If you are outside and you don't have a place to stay, you might not make it through the night. And so the culture has developed that people will look after each other. You know, they welcome travelers or visitors into their home because they know that back in the old days, it could have been a matter of life or death.
Absolutely.
And the thing about offering something, if you make if you give someone a compliment, like, oh, I really like that, you know, I really like that cup. That's a lovely cup. Then they'll say, ah, oh, please take it. It's yours. it's yours now. Please have the cup. Oh. Please, you must take the cup. And you're like, no, really, no. I just thought it was a nice cup. No, it is your cup. You like the cup, you please.
You have to be careful what you say you like, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you have to accept it at that point.
Oh, know? My goodness. Yeah, it's interesting because for us, that's just a way to establish a connection, right? Yeah. For sure. It's not like we're asking for the cup.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. We're just like, oh, I really like your cup. And you go, yes, that's right. It is a good cup. My cups are brilliant, aren't they? And then and then it's customary for you at some point to say, hey, I really like your cups as well. I think your cups are good too. And then we're like, we're both standing with a bit of distance, kind of go, your cups are good, my cups are good, or everyone's cups are good. We're united in a shared admiration for each other's cups. Yeah. I don't know why it's cups. It could be anything.
It could be anything, but why not?
It's a funny example.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Finally, just to finish this off, have you ever experienced a reverse culture shock?
Well, that's interesting that you mentioned that, because we actually had someone on the show, Kate Brubaker, a few months ago, and this is a real thing, re-entry. Mm-hmm. And the problem with re-entry is that people often don't realize, that don't plan for it, because they don't think it'll happen. They don't think it's real. They don't think it exists. They think, oh, I'm going back to my home country, so I'm at home there, and I'll be fine, but not necessarily, right? So have you
experienced? Oh, yeah. For me, especially after coming back from the Dominican Republic and coming back from Brazil, I lived much more simply in those places. I'll just go with the Dominican Republic as an example. I lived very simply. I ate a lot of local food, meaning rice and beans and plantains, very little meat, just very simple, very affordable food, because I was really living, you know, as a student would in the Dominican Republic. And so when I came back home, I just found the American cuisine to be excessively, you know, fatty and overly sugary and unnatural. And the portion sizes were huge. I mean, the portions are big in the Dominican Republic too, but the food is more simple. You don't have all of the mayonnaise or whatever we put on food
too
here.
Too intense, right? Just too intense.
Yeah. So it was actually a good thing, because then coming home, I ended up cooking more like a Dominican woman. Yeah. I cook a lot of rice and beans, and that's actually quite healthy and saves me a lot of money.
That's the cool thing about traveling. You can pick up aspects of the culture and create your own culture at home.
Yeah.
That's what. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I was just going to say that's apparently one of the, I mean, there are various outcomes to the process of adjusting to living in a different culture. And apparently, in my opinion, the best one, the best outcome is to sort of learn to adapt and to adopt even the best of both worlds.
Yes, definitely.
So you learn, for example, to cook like the Dominicans do, but you also learn to be on time for meetings like the Swiss are. You know.
Absolutely.
So you end up becoming like the ultimate person who's just like used all. Maybe that could be a superpower, you know? You know, you've got like the
intercultural person,
the cosmopolitan.
Intercultural man, you know? Or woman. It could be
superhero.
That's going to be my X-Men power. I'm going to some people can some of the X-Men can control ice and things like that. Very useful, I'm sure. But I'm going to be able to adapt to any culture. That's my superpower.
I love it.
Oh dear. Okay. I think on that note, it's probably a good point to stop the interview. Although I'm having a lot of fun.
Us too. It's great.
Well, we must do this again at some point. I think it's probably it's like dinner parties, you know. The first person is the host, and then the other one has to return the favor, and you keep going like that. That's the way it works.
Right. Thank you so much.
We will have you over soon.
Yeah.
Again. Yes, that's right.
Yeah. Well, whenever you deem it appropriate, then you know I'd be more than glad to talk to you again. Definitely.
We have one thing we wanted to mention for your audience. We made a Lindsay made a little
on this topic of intercultural skills and getting to know people in different cultures, that we've actually created an ebook just for your audience.
Oh, really? Wow.
And the title of the ebook is 4 Ways to Make American Friends. So if they happen to be in the US wanting to work on their language and cultural skills, they can come over and download this ebook, and it's at allearsenglish.com/Luke.
Oh, wow. My name? Wow.
Yes.
That's
you. Really... It's for your audience. So,
AllEarsEnglish.com. /Luke. Okay.
That's right.
I'll put that link on my site as well. And that's where my listeners can go and check out your ebook, which is all about cultural.
How to make American friends.
Yeah. How to become a cultural superhero.
Yes. Exactly.
All right. Fantastic stuff. Okay. Great. Lovely to talk to you.
You too. Thanks for having us on. That was fun.
It's a pleasure.
Great conversation.
Yeah. And I'll speak to you again soon. Have a lovely day.
You You too.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Bye for now. Bye. Hi, I hope you enjoyed that conversation. I did just say that I would now go into all the details of the different stages of culture shock, but I've decided, no, I'm not going to do that. No, I'm not. That's because this is Luke's English podcast and I make the rules. I can say one thing, I can do another thing. It's my house, okay? All right, so I'm not going to do that now, but I will do that in an episode soon. I know I say that kind of thing all the time, but I think it's a really interesting subject. So I hope to talk to you about the different stages of culture shock soon. I hope you enjoyed my chat with Lindsay and Gabby. They're great. It's nice to actually find out a bit more about them and get to know them a bit better and see that actually we've got loads of things in common and that we've had some similar experiences and stuff like that. So do check out their website, allearsenglish.com. You can find a link to that ebook that they mentioned. You can find that link on my website, my nice new fresh looking website, which I'm still working on. But for this episode, it's pretty much goodbye. And if you are having cultural experiences similar to the ones that you heard about in this episode, let us know. Let me know. Leave a few comments below this episode and tell us your stories. If you've lived in a different country and you've had some problems or experiences of having to adjust to a different way of life, tell us about it, won't you? I'd love to hear from you. Okay, that's it for this episode. Speak to you again very, very, very soon. But for now, it's goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English podcast. For more information, you can visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.